Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/news-ad-free. That's amazon.com/news-ad-free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Comes bob, bob, bobbing along, along. There'll be no more sobbing when he starts robbing his home. Sweet song, wake up, you sleepyhead. Get up, get out of bed. Cheer up, the sun is red. Live, love, laugh and be happy. What if I be blue? Now I'm walking through fields of flowers. Rain may glisten, but still I listen for hours and hours. I'm just a kid again, doing what I did again, singing a song. When the red, red robin comes bob, bob, bobbing along.
There were plenty of positives to take from yesterday's game, but the fact is that we've lost and we appear to be very much a club in crisis. So, very good evening to you and welcome to Charlton Live, coming to you live from the Valley here on Maritime Radio. My name is Louis Mendes, and joining me in the studio here to discuss yesterday's devastating opening day defeat up at the Stadium of Light is Tom Wallin. How are you doing, Tom?
Devastated.
Yeah. Looking fresh, though. You haven't actually travelled back from Newcastle today, like some of us. Yeah.
I've had a nice restful day.
Excellent stuff. Looking less fresh is Nathan Muller. He's had a couple of nights out in Sunderland, which is enough to do some bad things for a man. How you doing, Nath?
Not bad. I've got to go got to get my jabs in the morning, because it was quite ropey out there.
Yeah, I can imagine. Yeah,
I've had a shower, so I am sort of fresh.
Oh, right, so you probably stood out up there, actually. So on tonight's show, like I said, we will look back at yesterday's devastating 2-1 defeat up at the Stadium of Light. We're going to hear the commentary highlights. We'll hear from Lee Bowyer as well, his reaction to the game. We also want to hear from you guys. Obviously, there's plenty to talk about. This is our first Sunday show of the season, so welcome back to those of you who weren't listening on Thursday. We'd love for you to get involved with tonight's show, talk about the game, talk about the situation around the club, because it's, you know, it's not looking great, if we're being honest. We've got about 13 players at the moment who are fit. Obviously, we had the news that's now been confirmed that Jake Forster-Caskey's out injured for the season as well. So let us know what your fears are ahead of the new season, what positives you will take from yesterday, because like I say, I thought in the first half we were very much the better team, and there are positives to take. So, but anything you want to say, email studio@charltonlive.co.uk. You can tweet us at Charlton Live. Right, before we hear those audio highlights, Tom and Nath, you were both there. Let's start with you, Tom. You were doing the commentating. I listened back to your commentary and you sounded very dejected at the end, as the rest of us did, I'm sure, as well. But, I mean, your views on the game overall?
Overall, like you said in the intro there are a lot of positives to take from that. We've put out a half-fit side, a load of youth players, which out of necessity, and they went toe-to-toe with the team that are favourites for the league. And me and Greg talked before the game and said, look, it's probably a good time to play him because we're not sure they'll have found their feet at this level. But and it proved that way in the first half. But I think that's as much credit to us as it is discredit to them, because we ran the midfield with a youngster and someone who was half fit. I thought Aribo alongside him was awesome. The pace up front was scary, and we defended resolutely, and it showed because they had to match us second half formation wise. But credit to them for changing it up, and they grew into the game, and they probably deserved to get level if we're being totally honest. But we certainly didn't deserve to lose that game in the end. So yeah, I mean, like you said, at the end of the day, we've lost the game. We got no points from it, but there are positives to take. I think the bigger picture is the lack of squad depth and the amount of players we've actually got, and that doesn't look like changing anytime soon. So that's my big concern. But overall, in terms of performance, it wasn't actually that bad.
Yeah, I mean, where do you think it started to go wrong in the second half now? Because I would say in the first half, we were clearly the better team, clearly the team creating all the openings. We had that early lead, you know. If we're going to start looking at trying to look at trends again, well, maybe last season there was a few times where we didn't extend leads when we should have, and perhaps we did that again yesterday. But if you look at the fact that we did go to what is going to be one of the very favourites to win this league, the fact that we went there and, you know, played them off the park in the first half, or the first 40 minutes, certainly. I mean, certainly positives to take from that. But I mean, why do you think that stopped in the second half?
Two things. I think the first one, obviously, I can't agree more than Tom. He said everything I was going to say, but legs. I mean, when you're in that heat as well, you're looking at three of Lapsley, who's young, obviously, Aribo's young, and Prattley wasn't supposed to be starting yesterday, and he had to play 90 minutes. And the legs gone, and the legs went, because we were playing such a high press in the first half, it was inevitable. We would need to change it up. And obviously, Bowes looked behind him and thought, pants. Not off pants, but, you know, just like, yeah, what can I really do? And that's no disrespect to anyone on the bench. And he couldn't change it. And then for me, the second one, was Jason Pearce going off. I'm pretty sure that they wouldn't have scored that goal. I know Bo's already come out and said Page didn't do nothing wrong, but I just think as soon as he went off, we looked really uneasy. I mean, I don't know what Nabs was doing. He was like a right back for their goal or something, chasing up the pitch. But I think losing Pearce was a big one. But like you both said, I think there's loads of positives we can take. And I was fearing the worst Saturday morning. Even though I was optimistic on Thursday, I was, you know, quite pessimistic, which is unlike me on the Saturday, but loads of positives. It's just we just need to get the bodies in now.
Right, let's have a listen to the highlights of yesterday's game. Greg Stubley and our very own Tom Walling doing the commentary over on Valley Pass.
Marshall gets under control and back to Maguire. Maguire, there's a good run from Matthews inside the penalty area. Ball across goal is through everyone in the end. It's good defending from Prattley at the back post just to defend the ball for Charlton, and Page can clear up to Colin Grant. That's a great ball.
Lovely
Grant
touch.
With a touch, and he's clear here. Colin Grant approaching the penalty. It's a heavy touch. Can he get on the end of the second one?
Ref!
Paul Dunnity. It's
penalty.
A penalty for Charlton. Colin Grant bringing the ball forward. It looked like a heavy touch, and the covering challenge from Maguire brings him down. And Charlton, in the first 10 minutes here, have a glorious chance of penalty.
Unbelievable. From one end to the other. Firstly, the ball cut back across the Charlton box. As you say, went through everyone. Page over on the left-hand side then hit it long to Carlin Ahern-Grant, who was in a lot of space. Ahern-Grant's touch was heavy, but knocked it round the defender. He was then clean through. He took a massive heavy touch towards, I think, Leuvens or Matthew. And it didn't look like he was going to get there first, but his pace did get him there first. The Sunderland player brought him down, and he's given away a penalty, which is going to be taken by the summer signing Lyle Taylor in front of the away fans.
I don't know how there's not a booking. I really do not.
Or was he not last man as well? You could even argue a red card. Well, there's the double jeopardy rule, isn't there?
But not even a yellow card is bewildering. Absolutely bewildering. Some would even argue he's not even playing the ball there, Maguire. As Lyle Taylor has a glorious chance on his Addicks debut. Gives Charlton a lead. A referee blows whistle. Taylor steps up. Lyle Taylor.
Yes!
Charlton! Charlton take the lead after 9 minutes. Lyle Taylor on his Charlton debut gives the away side an unlikely lead.
Fantastic penalty from Lyle Taylor. No bother at all. Sticks it into the top corner. And seems to have pulled out a shirt there. Is that not sure what's going on down there, but is it for Jake Forster-Caskey possibly?
It is
the number
Forster-Caskey.
Eight. It is. He's holding up Jake Forster-Caskey's shirt in front of the Charlton dugout. He ran straight over to get it. A fantastic penalty, but as we said, a bright start from the Addicks overall. Lapsley's look good in the middle. Ahern-Grant's look dangerous going
now.
Forward.
Osterk plays it forward to Sinclair. Sinclair, he's got Maguire on the overlap, but instead cuts back inside and finds Honeyman. Honeyman in central midfield just twists away from Aribo, and he's looking for options, and there aren't any. So eventually goes out to Matthews, right of the back three over on that far side. He's got Gooch in front of him, but instead clips it inside to Marja, inside the penalty area, back to goal, chests it down, and then has a shot and it's in! And out of nothing, Sunderland have levelled. It was a speculative shot from Marja, who turned in the penalty area, had a shot with his left foot, and I think it caught Phillips by surprise. It's gone in at the near post, and what are we, 65 minutes, Sunderland a level.
It's a go out, nothing. It's a simple ball forward into the penalty area, and Pierce couldn't get his clearance, and Marja was able to turn. John probably happy for Marja to shoot from there, and Dylan Phillips is going to be a little bit upset with that. Marja has a shot towards the near post, just creeps past Phillips. He dived down to his left, couldn't get anything on it.
Disappointing from Charlton, but we have to admit that it probably has been coming in the second half. Sunderland have been the better team. They haven't created an awful lot in terms of chances on Phillips's goal, but they have been the better team. They have been attacking more, and it's going to be a real test of this young Charlton team now to see how they react to that goal. Left now, Charlton hanging on at the end.
The corner now is going to be taken by Maguire again. Maguire out in the back edge of the box towards Cooch, and it's gone under his foot. Luckily, it comes out to Oviedo. Chip ball back in towards the far post. There's a header, and it's in. Heartbreak for the Addicts. Cooch at the far post. Heads home. And Sunderland are set to win the opening game of the season.
Gutted. Absolutely gutted. There is no way those players deserve that. No way at all. No way those players deserve to concede in that fashion at this stage of the game. Heartbreak for Charlton.
Absolutely gutted, Tom, weren't you?
Yeah.
It doesn't sound any better on second listening there. Charlton beaten by 2-1. The 96th minute, the header from Lyndon Gooch. Which wins it for Sunderland. I mean, we came under all sorts of pressure in that second half, but I mean, really, when the Marja goal came out of nothing, and I thought I looked like we were going to hang on. We'd done enough. I thought we'd defended pretty resolutely. It's just it just seems to be the way everything goes these days, isn't it? Nothing can't have anything nice, can we, these days? And a point at Sunderland isn't too much to ask for, but we're not allowed it, unfortunately. So there we heard the highlights. I mean, did we deserve a point?
Yeah, definitely. And I think what you said there about we just don't seem to be getting a break at the moment. The football season hadn't even started and we didn't feel like we could catch a break. And that goal going in so late, if we'd have lost 2-1 and they'd scored in the 70th minute or something, I'd have still been annoyed because I thought we did enough for a point. But that to go in at the last minute there, and you can hear it, like the fan takes over, and it's just everything that's gone on with the injuries and the size of the squad and the ongoing takeover and everything just builds up, and it's just so frustrating because you get some of those things right and we probably wouldn't have lost that game yesterday. And those players work so hard, they were dead on their feet, and like Nave said earlier, Boya didn't really have anything to change it up, but they just worked so hard, and I just felt they deserved a point. And just at the end, such a cruel way to lose the game.
I mean, just with the situation that we're in and the size of the squad and the fact there's a hell of a lot of inexperience in there, do you worry that the fact we did lose the game in that way will take away anything that positive that the players could think, because they'll just be so downtrodden after that? Because as we said earlier, there's so much that we can take from that game that was good. It's just the manner of the defeat in particular just really sort of sucks it out of you.
Yeah, it does. But hopefully, the players can take positives in it, because we've all said, I mean, Sunderland are going to be up there. I mean, they've made a lot of changes and they've still got to settle, but them, Barnsley and Peterborough, are going to be up there, and I don't think many teams are going to go to the Stadium Alliance and certainly play like we did for a whole 45 minutes. They might do in spells or in little 20-minute patches, but they won't do it, I don't think, for 45 minutes. So I hope they can, especially the young ones. Lapsley, what was that? Was that his first start?
Yeah, first league start.
His first start. The first one, I think, is when I done Blackpool at home, wasn't it? When he come on, he looked a bit of rabbit in the headlights.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
I think, they've got to take a lot of positives. Prattley weren't fit. obviously, Dills is, he's experienced, but he's played a few games. But yeah, I think we've got to try and remain positive, because I think a lot of us probably were going in there. Well, I certainly was thinking we were going to get trounced, and it didn't happen. So I'm hoping, fingers crossed. But I don't think Bowes will let them sit there and mope about and stuff. But Yeah, well, it's on to the next one, isn't it?
Yeah. We talk about the starting lineup, of course, and now, as we all know now, which the Jake Forster-Kaski story came out. We did know on Thursday, but Boyer had asked for it to be sort of tried to sort of keep it to your chest sort of thing, because they didn't want to give Sunderland any advantage in knowing our starting lineup before, which is why we weren't allowed to report it on Thursday. We just sort of said just a rumour. So that's why we couldn't report it on Thursday. But I mean, it had pretty much got out anyway. So I don't think anyone was shocked that he wasn't involved, and obviously the disappointment there. Now that means Darren Pratley, who we were told a couple of weeks ago was no way he was going to play, get start against Sunderland, he had to play. Now, whether he's match fit or not, he had to play, and he was okay in the middle of the park. Lyle Taylor was a doubt because of his bruised foot, but he started up top and obviously got his first goal. And as we say, George Lapsley got his first start. Now, if you look at the age of the team, there was five in that starting 11 who were 23 or under. Obviously, we only named five subs out of a possible seven, and the average age of those was 21. And that's it, even including Saar and Ajoze are both over that age. So it's a very young bench, obviously with holes in it. So I mean, it is a case of, well, despite all those things, there is quality in that team that we saw. Dylan Phillips obviously got his start between the sticks as well, made some good saves in that second half. As we say, Taylor was the one up front. Carlin Grant, I thought, played quite well. And, you know, all these things came together in a first half where we looked reasonably lively. I mean, before we'd even scored, we'd already forced a couple of free kicks on the edge of the box that came close as well. So we certainly, you know, despite all the everything that's sort of going on, we started well and we started positive.
Yeah, yeah. And we'll hear from Boyer later, but the formation was a bit of a, not a surprise, but a late change for the players as well. And I thought, actually, that formation suited us really well, because we had heard a rumour when we were at the hotel on Friday night that was how we were going to play, but we were saying, well, why would we play like that? Because we haven't got any central midfielders already, and now we're going to put three in there? Like, how's that going to work? But actually, it worked really well. And like you say, Lapsley just had bundles of energy. Aribo, we know the talent and quality he's got. And Pratley, I still don't really know how fit he was, but he was prepared to put his body on the line, made some great blocks defensively, and got the ball and drove forwards as well. And it was that midfield at the start up against Honeyman and, is it Mumba, for Sunderland. They just couldn't cope. And we were overrunning them there and just looking to break with Grant and Taylor all the time. And for the first 10, 15 minutes, including the goal, they just couldn't get near us. But as you say, as the game wore on, Pratley can't have been fully fit because he was absolutely knackered. Lapsley seemed to keep going, but I feel maybe lost his head a little bit and started to get a bit out of position. Aribo looked knackered towards the end. And up front, like, the work that Taylor and Grant were doing as well was crucial to that formation as well, and both of them started to tire, and it was just that cost us in the end. But you're right, we started really brightly, and it's a formation I think I'd like to see continue.
Yeah, because obviously, as Bo explained afterwards, it was three at the back, which, like we said, we haven't really seen before under Lee Boyer at all. He's always gone for a 4-4-2, but it was a case of needs must. Now, let's talk about the opening goal that came our way. It was a superb run from Carlin Grant, and just watching the replay again just before we came on air, and I saw like the touch that he had to take it past the midfield, and then the burst of pace. Now, he's so quick, Carlin. I think, you know, I think early on last season, I thought he looked like he'd found a bit of confidence, and obviously he got his few goals when we got to sort of the October November sort of time. And then I was thinking, oh, I wonder if he's going to have a run in the side in the second half of the season. Then we shipped him out to Crawley, where obviously he scored a great amount of goals. And it just, to me now you forget he's one of the players who's only 20 years old. He's been around so long that I was shocked when I realised he's still only 20. I mean, he's someone who really now seems to be starting to grow into that position, and, you know, use that pace yesterday to get beyond and win the most blatant penalty of all time.
Yeah, no, I agree. I thought he played really well the whole game yesterday. Obviously, tired, but he seemed... Yeah, so, like, I'll go back. When he first came on the scene, I think we all know that it was too early. So as the years have gone on, he seems to have become more intelligent, and his decision making seems a lot more sharper, and he seems to have a bit more purpose in his play. Whereas when I can't remember the first game he played, it might have been Borough or something like that, he just seemed to just stay on the last man and just sort of chase the ball. But he looked really intelligent yesterday. I think him and Taylor linked up very well. And yeah, I don't think there's going to be many defenders that are going to like facing him, because that Ozturk, and I think was really, really overweight, but...
You should hear what he says about you,
no? Yeah, I know, exactly. That's why I'm saying it back. But no, but literally, he's like, he couldn't get near Grant. he couldn't get nowhere near him, and they were scared of him after obviously the penalty. So I think he's going to cause some problems this year.
Great penalty by Lyle Taylor. Obviously the fans up there weren't too happy with him because he turned down going to Sunderland in favour of coming to us. And then a classy celebration. Obviously we'll talk about the massive hole that Jake Foster-Caskey is going to leave later on in the show, but to grab the shirt, I mean, try and, you know, one of the other positives you can take ever since Bowie has taken over at the club as caretaker manager is the fact that the squad always seems very, very much together. And I guess, you know, that was a surefire sign of that when he lifted up the Foster-Caskey shirt.
Yeah, and you saw as soon as the goal went in, I think Taylor forgot for a second, but the rest of the players all ran over to the bench immediately, and he was like, yeah, that's what we're going to do. And it had clearly been something they'd orchestrated already, and it was a lovely touch. And I don't know if anyone's seen Jake Foster-Caskey's Instagram, but he then posted and sort of thanked the team and the support he's had as well. And like you say, we'll go into that later, but you're right, that unity is there. And I'm sure that's easier to sort of get together when you've got such a small squad. It must be harder when there's more and more players in there, but I don't think there's many bad eggs in this team. And that is a positive. It's not going to be enough to get us in playoffs or to go up just with that, but it's a massive step towards that. And it shows on the pitch as well, you know. They're all willing to fill in for each other and help each other out. And you've seen it throughout pre-season as well, I think, on the footage we've seen of, like, the trip to Portugal and things like that. It's a good atmosphere in the camp. And I think Bowyer deserves a huge amount of respect for doing that as well, because he's having to deal with quite a lot of PR in terms of keeping the mood positive, because outside of that, it looks like the whole thing's going to collapse. Anyone who saw the Independent article yesterday would probably see what's going on around the club, but he seems to be trying to protect the players from that as much as he can, and it is paying off, because as we say, despite the result, the performance yesterday was very good.
And as that first half continued, you'd expect a reaction from Sunderland, but you know, if there was one, I think we weathered it quite easily, really. And you know, all the chances pretty much until the last 5 minutes of that half were going the way of Charlton. Obviously Prattley had that effort from range at the keeper, palmed away, and I think Nathan thought that was in from behind the goal. Yeah. You said, didn't you?
Yeah, I thought it was, when he caught it, I thought there was going to be end up a bit more spin, and it was going to go obviously to the side a little bit more, but it didn't. But yeah, he caught it. Got enough connection on it, didn't he? But it was a good save, to be fair.
Yeah, and then a great run down where Aribo had that header as well that dropped just wide from the corner. I think that came just after Prattley's shot. Page, great run down the left. He's balling now. As soon as the ball fell for Lapsley, I was like, here we go. This could be absolute dream stuff here if we could get the Charlton boy on his full league debut. Obviously, he did it on his Checker Trade debut when he came off the bench. He's that was his actual Charlton debut, but his full league debut to get a goal would have been nice. But I think he just slightly rabbit in headlights there and just sort of side-footed it towards the goalkeeper. That could have been very, very nice indeed had that gone in. Then he saw he put that lovely little ball in as well for Taylor, but he was offside, unfortunately. But then it's just like I say, I think literally the last 5 minutes of that first half when they started to come back into it, Sunderland. So you know, we saw that a long shot from Oviedo, which was fairly easy for Phillips in the goal. And then you know, Marjar had a couple of half chances where it came towards him, and Ozturk had one where he volleyed wide. But you could just see just towards the end of that first half, I think they were just sort of starting to grow back into it.
Yeah, we said on comms that the half-time whistle, we needed it more than they did. And the force change, Love coming off and then Oviedo coming on and playing on the left. We said during the commentary, he seemed to be shooting every opportunity he got, and 90% of them were going harmlessly wide, but at least they were finally having shots from a Sunderland point of view. And Phillips hadn't had a save to make till that long shot that, okay, went straight into him, and it was a very comfortable save, but he hadn't had anything to do until that point. So Oviedo gave him a little bit of an attacking threat, and Maguire and Gooch swapped sides as well and matched Maguire up against Page, and I just felt they were just starting to grow into the game. They were playing that little bit higher up the pitch, and as you say, when the half-time whistle came, I was a bit relieved, and I thought, right, Bowyer's got a chance to firstly give them some rest, because it was such a frantic first half, but also just to sort of calm them down and get them back into shape and remind them what they were doing well. But then obviously in the second half, Sunderland came out and kind of picked up from where they'd left off at the end of the first half and continued to put that pressure on it. And as we say, matched up formation-wise.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, and to the tactical change, you just wonder if that helped to swing things in their favour as well. I mean, we did actually nearly nick a bit of a bizarre second goal, didn't we, at the start of the second half, where that cross came towards a rebound and he got underneath the header and was looping towards goal. And just for a second from where we were, Tom, it looked like the keeper had just completely misjudged it. But he recovered well. Then Solly, now, what a battler he was. He went down I'm not sure exactly what happened, if it was a clash of heads or something, but he went down and had to continue with a bandage, but there was no way he was going to go off. I thought Solly in particular looked very good yesterday.
Yeah, it was a clash of heads, and I didn't think he was going to come back on, but obviously he had no other faults. But yeah, I thought he played, especially, you know, he's not a centre-half, but I thought he'd done well. I think there was a couple of times he went out of position a little bit, but obviously I think they were obviously made people track certain people. So I think like Lapsley, for sure, they put him on Mamba because obviously his energy probably will follow him all around. But I think Solly, I wouldn't like to see him there every week because I think you might be coming up against bigger, lumpier sort of centre-forwards. But yeah, I think he slotted in really well there, and I think wherever he plays, I just really want him to score. Certainly, I want him to score at home. I obviously at Blackpool, but I still want him to score. But I think he had a good game yesterday. I think everyone did, to be fair. I don't think anyone had a bad game.
Yeah. The Sunderland equaliser, then, it came sort of just beyond the hour. Marjar with the goal. Now, we were just watching it back just before we came on air, and you know, you're always going to try and pick where you could have stopped that goal. So the ball's ended up with Marjar on the edge of the box. You've got sort of between them, Pearson and Lapsley, between them, one of them probably has got to sort of dive on him and put the block in, but they both sort of stood off. And then the shot, does it catch Phillips out? He's near post. Is he surprised? Does it go through a number of bodies so he's not going to see it? Or is someone on the forum perhaps saying it was a mistake by the goalkeeper? And do you think he could have done better with it and, you know, defending as well?
I think, yeah, all of them could have done better. It took us by surprise. You probably heard it in commentary there. We weren't expecting him to shoot, but you see him pick the ball up, and normally the striker then moves away towards the corner to try and sort of spin and get a cross in. And I think that's why they sit off, because they're like, right, we've got our position, there's going to be a cross coming, so let's just hold our position. But he doesn't, he spins. And as you say, Pearce and Lapsley are both at fault. Let's be like honest about it, at fault for not closing him down quicker. And it's a good shot, but when you see it again, Phillips, I think he would have expected to make a save there. But again, maybe it catches him out, but if you're going to be a keeper at this level, you can't be caught out by shots like that, and probably should have done a bit better as well. But, you know, I don't particularly want to dig anybody out, because, as Nath says, I don't really think anyone had a bad game. It was just a momentary lapse in concentration from all three of them, and suddenly you find yourself back level again.
I mean, is Phillips going to be asking for more from his defence in front of him there to close that shot down?
Yeah, I mean, it wasn't even the shot, it was the build-up. The geezer run about 20 yards.
Yeah.
And then
so
this is what I was saying about Lapsley. Lapsley was told to sit on this Mamba. So who was it running? Maguire.
Yeah.
So when Maguire was running, he didn't know whether to stick with Mamba or go and attack the ball. If you watch it back, he's obviously caught in two minds, and it's only last minute where he's come across, Pearce has pushed on, and he's already got the shot. Dills will be gutted. He will, because you should never be beaten at your near post. But he would say, you shouldn't get a shot off there. You shouldn't let a striker as well. If it was their centre half, you should. This player should never have had the time to shoot, but it is what it is, isn't it? But yeah, he'll be gutted, no doubt. But we should have defended it better.
I mean, because in particular, I felt that Phillips actually made a number of good saves. I mean, at the end of the first half, I don't think I even mentioned it there, where the shot was skanked,
yeah,
or shanked even, and it came to Marjar,
yeah,
in the area, and he was quick off his line to close the angles. You know, I mean, that's the sort of stuff we know he's good at. I know I've seen him make very good saves, you know, throughout his career, whether it be at Cheltenham, or I saw him at Cheltenham playing against Bromley once or twice as well, and he made a couple, some good saves in that as well. So we know what he's capable of. Mm. I mean, we had this discussion with Bowyer after the pre-season friendly against Crawley, in which he made a really good penalty save. He said, you know, Phillips is a, you know, good player, but there's something about experience, inexperience with goalkeepers. And you point out, well, you remember Nicky Pope, you know, he plays for England now, but his first couple of seasons, he was a bag of nerves, really, for Charlton. And I guess experience, when you're the man who's the last line of defence between conceding and not conceding, it's a real difficult place to learn and to make mistakes.
Yeah, I mean, sorry, Tom, I know, another thing we've also got to remember, if Amos made that save that Phillips done in the first half, everyone would be raving about it. What did we say against the Plymouth game? What did Amos do? Make a mistake. So it could actually end up that he's going to be absolute. I mean, look at Elliot Randolph. You've got to get experience from somewhere. Do you know what I mean? I just think we shouldn't be like digging deals out. But
my worry is about the fact that Bowyer's so desperate to get a keeper in. He keeps talking about it. If he's going to get someone in who's in his 30s towards the end of his career, happy to play if needed, but just to push him, and happy to sit on the bench if not. I think that's perfect for Dills, because for me, we should stick with him and give him this season, because we wasted him last season just sitting on the bench here. And okay, Amos did brilliantly and I was pleased to have him, but Phillips deserves his chance now. He's gone out on loan, he's tried his bits, he's been brilliant in pre-season, and like you say, made a lot of good saves yesterday. And whilst he, personally, I think he should be disappointed with that one mistake, that doesn't make him the goalkeeper he is. All those other saves do, and he's a very good keeper. He just needs experience at this level.
Now, one of the rare forays we actually had forward down the other end in the second half, and it was very rare, if we're being honest. I think, you know, if we are going to try and pick holes in the performance, you are going to say, well, we didn't really offer much of a threat at all in that second half. But we did have a corner. We had a couple of corners, really. One of them, Marshall hit one of the worst corners I've ever seen. But then, luckily, a couple of minutes later, he had another chance and put a much better in towards one in towards Bauer, who got a header. Didn't really quite catch his header right. But yeah, in terms of going forward in the second half, I mean, we were lacking. I mean, is it a case of the tiredness? Is it a case of the fact that Sunderland changed their system, matched us up? Or is it just the fact that we had something to hold on to?
Yeah, I think it was probably a bit of all of those three things you just said. I mean, just quickly on the set pieces. Marshall, when he stepped out with his left foot, I didn't know what was going on. But he's obviously been practicing just the little dinky curler ones, which that corner did make me laugh. But yeah, it was going to be down to tiredness as well. I was surprised he didn't even bring a Jose or Hackett Fairchild on for 10 minutes just to push him back, which I did find interesting, but it is what it is. But yeah, it was always good. We was always going to tire. In the middle of the pitch, we were so stretched. It was literally a case of, right, I think we should just hang on now. And then, like I said earlier, as soon as Pierce went off, I was a bit nervous. I was nervous anyway, and then when Pierce went off, I was even worse. But it was a nothing game. But
again, I didn't feel that nervous actually going into the closing stages. I thought, you know, we've let in this goal from there. I thought, well, I'm fairly confident we're going to take a point. I mean, Phillips did make that great save from Maguire, obviously trying to make up for his error giving away the penalty. Maguire made that free kick towards goal. You know, Phillips made a fairly routine save, but he got across. Oh, excuse me, he got across there to make the save. But then, you know, just as you're sort of going into the last 5 minutes, and then Jerome Sinclair. That's where I thought, right, brilliant, we've got our point here, because they've missed their big chance. I mean, just an absolute sitter for Sinclair as the ball was driven across into the edge of the 6-yard box, and he slides across, pokes it towards goal, and somehow pokes it wide. I mean, that was a real let off.
Yeah, I think that was a wayward shot from Oviedo again, if I'm right. But yeah, you're right, it dropped through and at half the ground thought it was in. But, you know, obviously it went wide. And like you, I kind of, after that, I didn't feel too nervous either. I thought, this game has 1-1 written all over it. We deserve 1-1. They probably deserve 1-1. Yes, we're tiring, but we were still restricting them to relatively few chances. And I thought, Dills then came out and claimed a corner at one point. And I thought, right, they don't look too bad. They look fairly solid. Obviously, Pierce then had to go off. But yeah, I wasn't too worried either. And that's why, again, why it was so devastating when it eventually went in.
Yeah, I mean, talk to me about this tackle that saw Piercy going off then, Nath, because I mean, I haven't seen a replay, and obviously you were behind the goal, so you would have had a better view than we did in that situation. Now, of course, you know, Piercy, he sat down, the stretcher came on, I thought, God, here we go, and he spent about 2 minutes getting onto the stretcher, and the second the stretcher got the other side of the white line, it's like, oh, I'm getting off now, I'm fine. But I mean, Bowyer's going to, we're going to find out about the extent of any injury over the next few days. Bowyer couldn't really give us too much on it, but the challenge itself, apparently Chump player's not too happy with it.
Yeah, no, it was late, and what I thought is, obviously with his standing leg, he's caught his knee and he's jarred it, because as soon as Piercy went down, he was waving, and we all know Piercy, he won't go down unless he's more or less dying. So we obviously thought the worst, and obviously he's had a good couple of minutes down, and then stretcher come on, and then he's got up, which, you know, sometimes it happens, sometimes it's just the shock of the injury, and then it will just, you can run it off, it's what sort of happens. But it was quite funny seeing the fans frothing at the mouth. Yeah. One geezer literally from the corner flag ran to Piercy, and as he was walking around just kept berating him. So the best bit was when their player went down and we just started booing as well. So, but hopefully he's walking, so that's a positive sign. Whether or not he's just tweaked it, I don't know, but I'm praying he's not injured, because sorry Nabs, but I can't have Nabs there. I'm sorry. I'd rather Solly and Page at centre half.
Good job you apologised. Nabby's our notorious Charlton Live listener, of course. I mean, the winning goal. I mean, you say you were laughing at the Sunderland fans. I was laughing at the corner that led to the winning goal, because, I mean, it was 96th minute. Their first game in the third tier in 31 years. I thought, you know, they need to be winning this game. They've got a set piece and they try something fancy and drag it towards the back of the, you know, the edge of the box where someone's completely air kicks it. And I thought, oh, I was laughing at that. But it comes out to the geezer a bit further out and he whips a lovely crossover and it's gone over, you know, it's gone over Paige's head, unfortunately. And it was a superb effort from Gooch. I think Phillips got a hand onto it, but there's nothing he can do. I mean, the noise we were discussing, that's one of the loudest, you know, goal noises I've ever heard. You know, Stadium Alight, very impressive at that time. But for us, I mean, you heard how gutted Greg and Tom were on commentary, and that was all of us, really. It's how we all felt. Because, I mean, it just knocks the stuffing out of you after everything that's happened this summer. You think, well, at least we can have day one, a good away performance and a solid point. We can't even have that.
Exactly, and that's why I was as gutted as I was. Because, like you say, it was just that build-up of everything. I thought, OK, we've got through all that. We're going to get a point, maybe. That doesn't excuse everything that's going on off the pitch, but if we come away with a point, that just shows that's what Charlton are all about, putting the effort in, getting the result still, you know, in the face of all the adversity. And the first goal, okay, we can point out mistakes, but that second goal was class. I mean, the cross back in was pretty much inch perfect. Paige, I don't think, could have done any more. To be honest, I've seen it back a couple of times. I don't know what more you want him to do. Gooch's head is so powerful, and Phillips does well to get a hand to it at all, but as you say, couldn't get it over the bar and hits the back of the net. And like you say, the crowd go wild. There was some bloke behind us celebrating wildly, commentator or something, which was annoying me. But I mean, you heard it, there was, what, 10, 15 seconds of dead air in that commentary because we just didn't know what to say. We were just completely broken. And obviously, I'm sure the players felt the same. I'm sure up in the stand, the fans felt the same as well. It was just felt unfair, really unfair.
Now, a lot of obviously what we've been talking about so far this evening is about, we're talking specifically about the game. So we're talking about 11 players on a pitch. We're talking about the manager on the sidelines. But, you know, I mean, Nathan mentioned Bowyer looking around and thinking pants behind him because, you know, now this is where the whole situation at the club comes into effect you because, I mean, you turn around and you haven't got anyone on the bench who you're willing to use for whatever reason. You know, Rico's very, very raw still. You know, Nicky Ojoze may well be off. He was on the bench, so he could have come on, I guess, but he was chosen not to use him. Other than that, you've got a couple of youngsters and a young goalkeeper. You know, this is where the situation is. Well, if Bowyer, all this cost cutting and all this, you know, not spending money. I mean, we know about the stuff here at the ground, you know, with the lights off here and, you know, the bottled water at the training ground, which you all read about the other day. Which, you know, and that is, in a way, it's ridiculous, but I mean, that stuff's, you know, it doesn't affect the team straight away. But what does affect the team is the fact that we ain't got any players. And so when our players are, you know, it's energy sapping heat at the Stadium of Light yesterday, which I can't imagine they have to worry about too often, but it was really hot yesterday up there. And, you know, the players are doing 11 men, getting knackered, especially when you're not in possession, you're getting tired. Bowyer needs to be able to look at his bench and bring on someone who can affect the game. And obviously, with this situation, with the playing squad being absolutely decimated by, you know, departures and injuries, there's nothing he can do about it. And it's, you know, we all know who's to blame, I guess.
Yeah, exactly. And I mean, what would have been ideal, we would have had a bit of experience on the bench in the middle that you'd bring up and go, you know, anyone, like, you know, we used to have Andrew Crofts or something. I know he weren't the greatest, but you'd bring him in and he'll just do a job. Yesterday, if he wanted to take Prattley off because he weren't even going to start, was he? And you bring Taylor Maloney off, so you've got George Lapsley, Taylor Maloney and Joe Rebo away in front of 31,000 fans trying to hold on to the league, first game of the season in the boiling sun. It's impossible, and I feel sorry for the players because of all that work that they done, which we've all said, it just sort of counts for nothing now in a way because we couldn't do it, and it's obviously having an effect, and I just don't want it to be demoralising for the players because they were unbelievable that first half. Unbelievable.
Yeah. I think we should have a break from our voices quickly because we're here from Lee Bowe, but there's more I want to discuss about that because there's something that's just confusing me a little bit, especially whilst the takeover hasn't gone through and, you know, who knows what's going on with that. It's really hard to say for all of us, but there's something confusing me about this cost-cutting and whatnot, but we'll come to that after because I think we need to hear from Lee Bowyer. Don't forget, we're also going to hear from you guys. We've got a few emails and plenty of tweets already lined up, so if you want to have your say on yesterday's game, anything about it, or, of course, the transfer situation, the takeover situation. Don't forget, the transfer window for permanent signings closes on Thursday evening as well, so if you want to have anything about that, email studio@charltonlive.co.uk. You can tweet us at Charlton Live. The other topics we're going to have tonight, just asking you what you made of our debutants in the form of Prattley and Taylor and of course George Lapsley as well. How much we're going to miss Jake Forsikowski. Like I say, anything else you want to say, let us know. But this is what Lee Bowyer had to say. He came to speak to myself and Jake from the News Shopper after yesterday's 2-1 defeat up at Sunderland. Lee, a late defeat here at Sunderland. What did you make of your team's performance today?
Good. I think to play the formation that we did, and we changed it yesterday morning. We prepared all week to play a different formation, and we had to change it, obviously losing Jake, and we've never played for it at the back under myself, so I think they've done very well, you know, to adapt that quickly. We dominated the first half, I thought. He was the better side anyway, and then obviously they matched us up in the second half, and I thought, well, that's good, like, and it shows that we were doing the right things. But then they just got a little bit of momentum, we dropped a little bit deep at times, and we couldn't get out. They just pinned us in, and that was it. And then once they got the first goal, you get the crowd going here, and so yeah. And obviously the second goal was, I think it was a great cross, and the fella came round the back, and it was a good finish. You know, there's sometimes you have to say, well, fair enough, that was a good goal, but the first one should never have happened.
For all the talk of injuries and that before the game, you would have been impressed with the way, particularly in the first half, your side came out today.
Yeah, but I know they can do that. You know, they're all good players. They're all good at different things. So that's why you have a squad. And I think everybody done well. Everybody give me 100%. Like I said, give me 100%. Go out there, give me 100% and enjoy the game. You know, this is what it's about, football and playing in stadiums like this. So they done that, but unfortunately football's a cruel game at times, and they didn't deserve to lose today, I don't think.
Dylan Phillips in between the sticks today has been given your number one jersey. He made a number of excellent saves in that second half, so he'd be disappointed that he couldn't come away with a clean sheet.
Yep, obviously we're all disappointed because we knew clean sheet we'd win the game. I said that before the game, if we keep a clean sheet we win it. I knew we'd score. We should have probably maybe took one or two other chances, or our final ball, you know, wasn't the best today. But yeah, no, Dylan done well, made some good saves.
And a couple of weeks ago you were saying we weren't sure if Darren Prattley, for example, was going to be fit enough for today's game, but was it a case of you had to put him in after the injury to Jake?
Yeah, we had no choice. You have no choice. There's no way we could have started with Taylor Maloney and George in the same starting 11 when they've never started a first team game themselves, and especially coming here. But I thought George was excellent today. He'd done everything we asked, and in and out of possession, I thought he done himself proud.
How's Jason Pearce after he had to go off late there with an injury?
I'm not sure. I've not spoke to the physio about it, but I'm sure he'll be fine. We've got a week recovery now, so I'm sure he'll be fine.
And obviously the news came out today about Jake's injury that he got in training during the week. I mean, it's a devastating blow for the player and for yourself as well, because it's an important part of your team.
Yeah, that was Thursday. So, like I said, we prepared for this game all week. I named the team on Tuesday. So we worked Tuesday and Thursday, really, to sort out how they play, what their strengths are. And obviously to lose Jake on Thursday was a massive blow. Obviously for us and for himself, because no one wants to see anyone get an injury like what he got, and the strange thing is, it was like it wasn't any contact or anything, it wasn't a tackle, it was just literally running to close someone down, try to stop and just give way. So the kid was in bits, and we all feel for him, you know, because he's been excellent pre-season. And he's a big part of our side, so a lot of our play goes through him.
And with Jake now out for the season, is that another body now you're going to have to try and bring in, and will you be able to bring in another one?
Yeah, I'm sure we will. I'm sure that the owner will give us another midfielder, because obviously Jake is a big part.
Thank you.
And Lee, just with the trialists who are obviously with the club in pre-season, has a decision been made on the likes of Simon Dawkins, Rowan Ince? Yeah.
Rowan Ince is injured.
Oh,
So his time will be up with us now.
All right.
And Dawkins, we'll just keep looking at him, and he'll keep training with us, and but we'll have to make a decision probably one day this week, I think, ahead of next weekend.
Yeah, and what's that? Ince's injury.
What's what?
What's his injury? Ince's injury.
Ince knee.
Knee injury.
He's got something wrong with his knee, so he had a scan yesterday, and he's got something wrong with his knee, but he came with it. So Avi's been training and playing every day, playing in the games. I don't know. So, but yeah, he's injured.
Over on the overlap, he chooses to use him. Holmes uses him decoy. Crosses now in towards McInnes. Ooh. Headed away. No, it's come to Fosu in the penalty area. Fosu, little step over. Fosu onto his left foot. Tariq Fosu still.
Yeah. 2-1. Oh, what a finish.
Tariq Fosu, great work to come inside onto his left foot. Couple of step overs, worked a bit of space. His reverse shot past Cairns and Charlton are back ahead.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Back to Charlton Live. Just heard there from Lee Bowyer here on Maritime Radio. Spoke to him after yesterday's game up at the stadium, and like, obviously disappointed to come away with a defeat. But he was proud of his performance and of his players' performance, and with good reason as well, because as we discussed, particularly in the first half, We played well. Now, a few things that came out of that yesterday. I did have to admit when he said we won't be signing Rowan Ince because he's injured, I did have a little chuckle to myself, because I was like, the curse has spread to players. Anyone who even has heard of Charlton's going to get injured soon at this rate. But I mean, overall, I mean, you understand his sort of reaction to the game, I guess, Tom?
Yeah, I do. I think he has every right to be proud of them because they've implemented everything that he asked of them at very short notice, obviously, given the injury that occurred at the training ground on Friday and on Thursday. And yeah, I think they've done really well, and it was hard to see it on Saturday afternoon, but having now slept on it, there is a lot of positives to take out of that. And look, we don't actually know where Sunderland are going to finish, but if they are going to be up there, then we've gone toe-to-toe with them and coped very well, and that bodes well for the next few games, at least, until we start to get some of our first team players fit. He says hopefully that we're going to sign a few more as well, so we've obviously only got a week, but I think we know we need to do that. I think he's got every right to be proud, and I think those players did him proud yesterday.
Bowyer's positivity sort of overall with the situation that we're in, and sort of doing the best with what he's got, as we know he has to. I mean, son, do you think that's the right way to be? I mean, they're talking about promotion, for example, that the aim this season is promotion, and he doesn't want to go for the playoffs, he wants to go for autos because the playoffs are a lottery. Now, from the outside looking in, I mean, I'd be shocked if we're up there challenging with the size of the squad we got, but that is the one aim that he set out, and obviously he used it a lot last season. I mean, do you think that's the right way to go? I mean, do you think some people think, well, maybe that's a bit naivety, setting your hopes too high?
I don't know, I do and I don't. I mean, I don't personally think we're going to finish top two. With the players coming back, if we stay fit, I can't see it. You've got Fosu, Clark, Vetekele, and Reeves. I mean, you put them in that team, we're more than capable of beating anyone in that league. But obviously it's 6 weeks away. I don't think he should come out and say, oh, well, no, we ain't going to finish playoffs. I should, you know, I think we should make the players believe in themselves for sure. But I wouldn't say like winning it.
I don't think he really knows any other way. Mm. Like, he's just being honest.
He's a winner, isn't he?
He genuinely thinks, well, why can't we go up? We've got good players, and so he's just saying that. And I think, yeah, I do think it's working because, like you say, it got a performance out of them yesterday, and those players aren't going to be able to do that Saturday, Tuesday every week, which is why we need more players and why we need the injuries back. But like Nath says, some of the quality that we have got is better than so much of this league. We saw it last season as well. The standard of the league is not good. We just need to be able to cope with a few injuries, and that's the problem that we can't do.
Yeah, I mean, we were absolutely on, you know, on the absolute precipice of not having a bench yesterday. I mean, yeah. The fact that Boya seemed so unreliant on them when he could have brought them on and decided not to suggests that he really didn't want to have to bring any of them on. So, I mean, and that's the thing I mentioned before we heard from him. Now, the thing for me is now, I know we have got these players that are going to come back, but in that time, other people are going to go out. You know, especially if we were talking about this rumor that people are talking about now with in the Independent says that Aribo might be available for £1 million, and I would pay £1 million for Joe Aribo if I was a Championship or a Premier League player, because that's no risk at all. £1 million is nothing in football these days. So, you know, if we lose any more before getting in, you know, who are we going to get in? You know, even the trialists are getting injured. I mean, Bayer's certain we're going to have some more bodies in before next week, but who are they going to be, and are they going to be up to that level? Now, all this cost cutting and looking at a bench yesterday, and the fact that because we didn't have a real bench, and it's all well and good having a nice 11, you know, when fit, you know, in 6 weeks' time, we'll probably have a very good starting 11, but it won't last forever for sure. Now, surely Roland's taken a bit of a chance here because the takeover hasn't gone through yet, and for all the, you know, at one point we were expecting it to go through last February, and this is still dragging on. I mean, if it's dragged on that long, there's no reason why it couldn't drag on for another 6 months, you know, for all we know. If we get relegated this season, then surely Roland is not going to be able to get the same amount of money for the club that he's supposedly going to be able to get now. So why is he taking this risk? Why on earth is he taking the risk? I mean, I'm not saying we are going to get relegated. I think, you know, there's so much dross in this league, as we saw last season, that we do well to get relegated above all that. But why are we taking this risk?
Well, I don't know. And that's what confuses me. I mean, he wants what? What's the rumour? About 40 million, but he wants 47 to cover certain aspects of the club or whatever, which... But then surely if you start selling all your assets, so you've sold McGuinness to an extent, but you know, you like the Uribos and stuff, then surely that reduces the value of the club, no? So then that's what I'm struggling to get, is if he's doing this, then it will reduce the value of the club, so then the takeover should be going through quicker. No, is that not how it works? Or because no one's going to pay 40 or whatever it is million for when it was agreed apparently to now, because you've got hardly any players. I know you've cut the electric bill by maybe 50 quid a month or whatever it is, but do you know, I don't know, it just baffles me. And he's obviously, if we did get relegated, you're probably looking at half that, maybe even more. You're probably looking at like 15 million or something, because who's going to want to buy a League 2 club?
Especially for that amount of money.
With the overheads that we're going to incur with the ground and everything, it's not... You're going to have to cut everything, and he's playing a dangerous game, because if he sells Joe, I said earlier, I think that's when I'm going to start getting angry, because we will be on our knees, literally. I honestly think that.
I mean, is relegation a serious proposition? A serious risk this season?
I don't think so, but like Nath says, if Aribo goes and Bauer goes this week, and we get to the end of the window and we haven't signed anyone, then I might change my mind. But I just think we do have enough quality. We could easily finish down there, easily, but I do think we've got enough to stay up. But what you're both saying is completely right. He is walking a very dangerous line, and I completely understand the want to cut costs and save himself some money while this goes through. But how long is he going to keep doing that for? Because it's been going through, supposedly, for 5 months now, and it hasn't happened. So if it takes another 5 months or another 6 months, how much is he going to have to start cutting? He's cut players, he's cutting all this stuff at the training ground. But you're just going to have, 10 players or 11 players and just play your youth team? Like, it gets to the point where you just think, every single person that leaves this building, he's not replacing them. Okay, Prattley and Taylor have come in, but backroom staff and playing personnel now, people are leaving day after day after day, and he's not replacing them with anyone. And you can't run a football club like that, because if that was to continue over the next 5 or 6 months, then we'd even just as a football club existing, we're in real trouble. My thing is that it just can't drag on that long. It can't. And if it does, then I think we're in very serious trouble.
I mean, Richard Corley on South London Press sports editor put on his back page on Friday. If you can go and onto the South London Press website and read this story now about whether the Keith Harris, who was involved something to do with Everton, is now scrambling around trying to find extra funding for the Australians to try and keep their bid alive. Now, if that is the case, that we're in a situation where the bid may or may not be kept alive now. I mean, where on earth will we go next if that doesn't happen? Because so far, the Australians seem to be the ones most likely to pay this bizarre high price for the club. Mm-hmm. So if they don't come in, irrelevant to the transfer situation, because they're not going to sort it out between now and Thursday, unfortunately. So if they fall through and then we ain't got nothing in January, for example, I mean,
if the takeover falls through, then I think relegation's well within our reach.
Yeah.
Like, it's a very
to aim for.
yeah, very, very real possibility because we're relying on that. Like you say, even if, let's say the takeover doesn't go through and Roland then decides, okay, well, as I've got them for a little while, I want to make sure they stay in this league. He's not suddenly going to lump out 5 million in January. He's going to bring in a few loan players like he has every other year when we've been struggling and try and limp us through to the end of the season, and that ain't going to work. So.
Right, let's we've got you all in the mood for it now. Let's have a look at some of the correspondence. Obviously, there was a game of football yesterday, as we have discussed, and James Moyniard was the first one involved. Straight after the game, he says, "I'm gutted after that. I didn't think that Sunderland deserved the 3 points. Pretty even over 90 minutes, but as usual, we don't take our chances. We need to control the game for 90 minutes. Considering the difference in the two clubs at the moment, though, I thought the 11 men on the pitch did us proud." And like I say, you can't argue with that.
Not at all.
The fact that, the 11 men, and that, again, that's what I'm going to say, like, under Bowyer, under Jackson, this unity they've got within this squad, like I say, sprinkling of quality throughout the team, and when we get our injuries back, we're not going to be throwing in the towel. It's just a case of, sometimes if you're trying your best, but there's no subs, and there's no, unfortunately you have to play too many young players who aren't ready all at once at the same time, then, no matter how hard you try, it might not be enough, and that's what I'm mostly worried about. I don't think I'm ever going to find too much criticism for the management at the moment in terms of Jackson and Bowyer, because I think they're going to do the best of what they've got.
Yeah, and that's all they can do. I mean, yesterday when we was talking about subs, we're not obviously trying to make subs to go and win the game 3-0, but just to manage the game better. Fresh legs and fresh minds, especially in that heat, would come in handy. And but like you say, you couldn't do it. Who's he going to bring on Taylor Maloney for his first league game? He's not going to. What if he crumbles? You know what I mean? It's like they always say, like, what's it, the blooming tradesman never blames his tools or whatever, but he can, but he won't, because Bowyer's too proud to do that. And if he starts doing that, then it will show, the players will start disbelieving, and so he's got to keep positive. And that's all. What can he do? I mean, I don't think any other manager in the world could do much better than what he's doing at the moment.
Right, a tweet came in from Ev James. Says, "So we go again with such a paper thin squad. With that in mind, we didn't play that bad. We lost, but only because we ran out of steam. Players coming in are imminent, so happy days are to come. It's the first game, so let's see after 6 games. And he says, "Are there phone-ins yet?" We're not actually doing the Love Sport phone-in show anymore this season, unfortunately. We just became too much, really, for the three of us doing the show 3 times a week, so we're not going to be doing that. But you say, I mean, Ev's there sort of obviously caught up with the fact now that we do have quite a thin squad, as per what I've said over summer, and Jason Pearce said it himself at the time. I remember Ev was a bit, "Oh, come on, you've got to be more positive." But, we are trying to be positive as we can, because it's the start of a new season. But people are going to see the cracks in the squad. The worst thing about when Ev tweeted me saying, "Oh, you've got to be more positive," was bloody Thomas Dreisen liked that tweet. And I was like, "Come on, mate, you're the one who got us into this bloody mess in the first place." But yeah, that's what Ev's saying. Then he goes on and says, "Let's get used to the idea that the club is not being sold. We need to get together and give the players belief that we want them to do well. Passion and desire always gives a sense of purpose, so stop the stay away and show that we all care for our club." Now, obviously, that's Ev's views. I mean, we know there's plenty of people boycotting or staying away for different reasons. I don't think you can question anyone's love for the club, and I never will, but whether they're coming or not coming. Getting behind the players, so I think everyone does. Everyone, you said how proud they were of the performance yesterday. People pick out individual this and that, because that's football, that's how it works. But yeah, I mean, with this takeover hanging over them, if we do have to get used to the club not being sold, as Ev says there, then that's slightly worrying.
Yeah, we spoke about it actually on Friday night before the game, and we were running through the squad, and I'm not going to name names, but we said there's maybe at most one or two that we wouldn't call Charlton players. The majority of that squad are, you know, they understand what it means to play for Charlton. They give everything for Charlton, and okay, sometimes maybe they lack a bit of quality, but they always give 100%. And you know, that sign over the tunnel at the Valley that says this team never gives up, I think it's a bit cheesy and I don't particularly like it, but we need to show that now, because like Ev says, that's not going to get us to the title or anything like that this season, but that might be what prevents us from slipping even further down. And they showed that on Saturday, and they shouldn't be disheartened by the fact that they lost that game, because he's right, that teamwork and that spirit, that can get you a long way. It'd be interesting to see when we come up against hopefully slightly lesser opposition at the weekend. No disrespect to them, but they're obviously going through a transition as well, having lost their manager, and there's quite a few personnel changes there as well. So yeah, it's a long season, it's one game. We don't want to read too much into that result, because we were 30 seconds away from getting a very good point against a team that last season were playing the division above. So
2 seasons ago in the Premier League. Yeah, you're right in saying obviously our next game is Saturday up at Shrewsbury, which is good. One, if there is one positive to come out of yesterday, is that I found out the Milton Keynes Cup game isn't this Tuesday, because I was literally going to leave my work at about 4 o'clock on Tuesday, get to Milton Keynes, and there's going to be no one there, because it turns out the Cup game's the week after. So our next game is Shrewsbury on Saturday. No one make the mistake that I was going to make. Right, Kai Williams says, now I just tweeted out from the Charlton Live account saying, what did you make of the defeat? And straight away Kai says, we needed Ben Amos. I mean, do you think Ben Amos would save either of those two goals?
Possibly the first one, but you don't know, because I still think it should have been stopped before he had the shot. I said, yeah, Dills probably wouldn't be too delighted with it, which you could see he wasn't. But I don't think it was a good header. It was a great header, the second one. But then, like I said, Dills made a couple of good saves before that. So I don't think it would have made any much of a difference, but it's all hindsight, isn't it? In my opinion, anyway.
Yeah, and then Kai added a second tweet. Didn't deserve to lose that. A good performance, but ran out of steam way too quickly. And says the Charlton fans were class as always. Yeah, they sounded good from where we were set up. We couldn't actually see them where we were in the very back row of the stand. To the right of the Charlton fans as they were facing the pitch, and you, the Charlton fans were in the top tier of the stand behind the goal, so we couldn't see them and they couldn't see us because the roof going down. But I'm guessing there's about 800 or so up there yesterday. They certainly made themselves heard, in particular in the first half when we were doing well. Now Jesse tweeted in, excellent first half, which surprised me. Absolutely gutted to see the game end the way it did. Would have been pleased with 1 point. Overall, an okay performance, but the players' fitness seems a problem, and we desperately need to strengthen the squad. Now, interesting about the fitness. We did tire. I mean, like, as we say, I mean, we spoke to Pagey after, and you'll read that in the SLP tomorrow. But Pagey was sort of saying, oh, you know, we were sapped by the heat, and it was hot down there. And you imagine, like, everyone says apparently at Wembley it's always much hotter pitch side because you're in an enclosed bowl, and that's pretty much the same at Sunderland. So I'm guessing, you know, when you're running around and you're getting knackered, that's when you want to throw on some fresh legs. But Bowyer obviously was very reluctant to do so with what he had available on the bench.
Yeah, and we called it. Even just before half time, I think Taylor, I can't remember if he went down or not, but he looked to be limping a little bit. And as the whistle went, Hackett Fairchild was straight up warming up, and we were like, okay, maybe he's even going to make a change now. And he obviously didn't, but the longer the game on, him and Grant in particular, and Prattley in the middle, they just started to look tired. And I don't think that is a fitness issue. I think it was a combination of the heat and the fact they were just up against it, because they were being put under a lot of pressure, and the pressing they put on in the first half did eventually wear them out. And like you say, you look at the players that Sunderland were able to bring on. Okay, Oviedo and Jerome Sinclair as two examples, but they were just able to bring on class. And it isn't any disrespect to those players, because Naby Sarr can come on and do a job, and Jose can come on and do a job as well when you're maybe looking to snatch a goal when you're 1-0 down or something like that. But they're not players you would bring on to try and see out a game. And like Nafe says, someone in the past, like a Bradley Pritchard or someone, to come and shore things up, we haven't got those options at the moment.
Right, back onto the tweets again. Paul Ferguson, great first half, but a massive problem was that we couldn't change anything tactically the second half. Not much Bowyer can do with no options on the bench to improve things or change it up. If we can only play one way, then I doubt we'll be in the top half of the table. I mean, like I said, with what we had, I mean, obviously, we talk about how Sunderland matched us up. Do you reckon there's anything we could have done differently just with the personnel, just to try and see it out?
Yeah, I sort of agree with Paul. I mean, the only thing I probably would have done is maybe brought Jose or Hackett Fairchild on just to push him back 10 yards with fresh legs and pace. That's the only... I mean, you couldn't... I wouldn't have brought Maloney on, even though Prattley was... You know, he's not done 90 minutes, has he? So, just through experience, he might not be able to run because he's not, you know, he's still behind in terms of fitness. I think he done a lot for the positioning sense for the younger lads. But yeah, that was the only change I would do, is maybe could have brought Taylor off, but then he held the ball up well, extremely well, when it went up to him, very rarely. But yeah, I would have just brought on a bit of pace, just push him back. But that's what I mean. Five subs, what can you do?
Daniel says, didn't take our chances, let a soft goal in and the home fans got behind them. Unlucky not to take at least a point. I'm proud of my club, but disappointed with the owner, and he hopes that he sells up as soon as possible. Right, keep going through the tweets. BH1990CFC says, good first half hour or so. Bench was embarrassing, though. He says, interesting comments from Sulaco that would never want to leave the Valley. Now, you were on the Love Sport Radio the other day, Nathan. I have to admit, I haven't listened to it, but you said John Sulaco put something out there for you. What was it?
I don't know. Someone said to me today what the story was, and we was just talking about the current predicament we're in, and then he went on to say that he knew someone, or he's been speaking to someone regularly about they really want to invest in Cheltenham, but you know, there'd be certain elements that we'd have to agree to, maybe like the stadium or something like that. So that's all it was. I don't know how true it is, or if there's any found that he didn't back it up with anything. It was just I was told. So it is interesting, but we don't know how true it is. But you know, I can say that, oh, I know someone who wants to buy the club. It doesn't mean anything. But I would, at the time, I thought, well, if Sulaco, you know, he's obviously got contacts in football. And I put it out there, but obviously it's not happening, because otherwise it's just the Australians are interested, isn't it, apparently. So obviously they don't want to snoot too much.
I think you take probably what he'd say is with a pinch of salt, really.
Exactly.
I personally would be surprised. I mean, people have discussed the viability of building at the Valley and stuff, and I think a lot of people have said, well, actually, if you think about it, it's actually quite a difficult site to work with. For starters, apparently it's registered as a sports ground or whatever, so you have to get that chain, all these different things. And you know, the access to Floyd Road is actually not great, especially if you want to bring lorries down to build stuff. So loads of different things about that. So I mean, I'd be surprised if it's true. I have to admit, I've never really turned to John Sulaco as like, you know, if I'm ever looking for answers to any questions, if I'm being quite honest. So I'm not so sure about that one. Right, Stuart Court said the first half was good, the second half not so good, which is probably fair to say. Will Bolland says, please read this tonight on the show. Charlton Live says, remember, Charlton fans, it's always darkest before the dawn. Keep the faith. And it's interesting that tweet is dated the 21st of February. First said that, so he's still desperately trying to keep the faith. so hopefully that'll be the situation as we go on. Right, Bob Liskam, evening guys. He said, well, he's asking as well, do you think there's any truth in the John Sulaco rumours? As I said, I'm not really sure, but you know, that's safe.
It's all hearsay, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly.
He said, she said.
Yeah, Richard Justin says, possible keepers, Matthews, Ripley and Woodman have all been linked. Now, I think Richard, put those in the paper a couple of weeks ago now. I mean, we don't really know. I mean, Boyer was hoping to. I mean, if there was one, a specific one that he knows, then surely he would have gone out and got him by now, I guess.
Yeah, I'm with Tom. I think if you get an older guy, I'd do that just to push deals. I just don't see the point in enhancing a youngster's career who's not our own. I really don't see the point in it. Because if you do get this Ripley or whoever in, then Dills has got to go, because Dills has to play. He's at the age now, he has to play. What's the point? What are we going to do next year? Just say to Dills, oh yeah, you've got to be on the bench again. I'll get a journeyman in and then get him to push deals and pass on these sort of experience.
Yeah, right. Sebo says, moments like yesterday are always tough to take, but it's not. But that is not football sometimes, but sport sometimes. And sport can sometimes have the horrible, uncanny knack of kicking you in the ghoulies, I'm afraid. And Seb, you're not wrong there. It's particularly painful, of course, though, when it happens to Cheltenham, getting kicked in the old Cheltenham ghoulies. There, right. Jonathan Ackworth says, a message to Roland, just sell the club and do not get the FA involved get the FA involved. They need to sort this mess out before it ends up like the Oystons at Blackpool, if not worse. Now, I mean, the FA are supposedly trying to tighten up, or have tried to tighten up, their fit and proper persons test. which is obviously good because it's obviously needed. But at the same time, I still don't understand, and maybe someone can put me right on this, how, what really, I mean, what rule can the FA bring in to stop someone taking over a club? And let's say it's not Roland who's trying to think, oh, actually, I'm going to try and do this and this and this. Let's say it's someone's taken over Oldham, local businessman, sort of the earth guy, you know, born within the 500 yards of Boundary Park, loves the club, takes them over. Well, actually, I ain't actually got that much money, though, so I'm going to try and do my best I can, but we can't sign that many players. We've got relegated. Oh, that's happened. I mean, what's different between that and Roland saying, actually, I don't want to spend any of my billions anymore or my millions anymore? What's the difference, and what can the FA do to stop that happening?
It's not a lot, because it's the same as in any business. I know football's not exclusive. It is a business. If he chooses not to put more resources into the club, he's not actually doing anything illegal. Yeah, he might be careless and he's making the wrong decisions, which we all know he is, but he's not actually doing anything illegal. So I don't know, he can't be charged for anything. Unless he does something, you know, illegal, or he takes it into administration or something. He's, at the moment, he's just not putting his hand in his pocket, isn't illegal.
Yeah, Jonathan follows up with that. Could administration work for Charlton right now? We said, well, why on earth would Roland put the club into administration? Because then he does lose everything that he's wasted already anyway, but there's no way he gets it back. So surely that makes absolutely no sense that he'd do that. And I see no reason.
Palace done it, didn't they?
Yeah, but they're
odd ones, aren't they?
Yeah, exactly, yeah. Right, Garmy and Bob have both asked me the same question, pretty much, saying, has anyone asked Boya about registering Jacko as a player again? I mean, come on, we might as well get Derek Ailes in. I mean, obviously not quite the same, but we can't...
It's a bit harsh,
yeah,
isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, that's not quite the same, actually. But,
I hope he's listening.
But we can't just go back and, you know, he's retired now, and Jacko's got his new role that he's going to be very good at as well. So I mean, we can't just start... I mean, that would be a real sign of desperation. I love Jacko and always have, but I mean, that would be a real desperate measure if that happens. Yeah. Still cost him a wage as well, wouldn't it?
Yeah. I mean, there are players out there that we can bring in. And I understand, and we said this on Thursday show, I understand Boya not wanting to bring bodies through that aren't going to improve us. To be honest, we're getting to the stage now where any players will do. Just anyone that can make a difference. And you know, I'm not saying you sign someone from Conference North who's played two games and, you know, some 35-year-old right back or something like that. But there's got to be players out of contract who are around who would just be able to do a job when you're 1-1 at the stadium alight. I mean, that's not going to happen again this season. But
we might get into the FA Cup.
Those kind of scenarios, just a couple of bodies that can do that even. And like, if anyone's seen the Valley Pass interview with Boya, he says 100% we're making signings this week. So he's going to look pretty silly if we don't. So I'm kind of, I trust him, and I assume there are people.
I've heard Charlton Invicta have got a fringe squad player who'd happy to do a job. If are you up for it now?
Seen the tackles he puts in. He'd do a job in the 90th minute.
Richard Justin says, remember, Oviedo was in the Costa Rica World Cup squad. No other League One club will have that quality. Hey Ho Rothko says, we'll do very well to not be involved in a relegation battle. The squad is far too thin. The likes of Lapsley aren't ready for this, and there is no sign of any light at the end of this dark tunnel. And that's why, I mean, trying to find the right balance. So I was on the train back from Newcastle today and had to write my paper report that's going to go in for Tuesday about yesterday's game, which is more, rather than just a list of what's happened, it's like trying to analyse what the state of the club and what we can learn from this game. And I was thinking, like, I mean, obviously, you know, I was you know, on a bit of a downer from a good night out last night, and you're a bit tired, and you're thinking, I hope I'm not being too doom and gloom here, but if this week we don't see some serious good business at this club, then we will be bottom half, I reckon. I hate to say it, because you know, I love some of the players of this team. I love the manager. I think he's doing the best of what he can. I love the assistant manager as well. But as I say, like, trying your best ain't going to be enough if you've been asked to go and build a skyscraper and they've given you two bricks and a hammer, you ain't going
to
do it.
I've just had a look at the odds, and we're 12-1 to go up or to win the league, and we're 12-1 to get relegated. And I think that sums it up. No one, I know odds aren't everything, but no one can figure us out as a team. And I think yesterday's raised a bit more awareness to the general public about the state of our club. The fact that we named that bench, and the fact they'll have been watching players they've probably never heard of.
But then they would have seen that performance and then thought, oh, actually, maybe it's being blown out of proportion.
And that's the juxtaposition that's so confusing, because you just can't work us out at the moment. We might now go and win our next five games with those players, and who knows, but... Yeah. Or this takeover might roll on and on and on, and Roland decides he's cutting goalkeepers to save some money, and we've got to play with 10 players every week. So who knows?
Like, even when you go back to the interviews of Piercy and Jake in the summer, they both said, "Yeah, we're good players, but we do need bodies in." Yeah. And that's them not saying that we're not good enough. They're saying, realistically, we struggled at certain. I mean, look at last Christmas. Mm. We struggled last Christmas because of the amount of injuries.
Season before last, we flirted with relegation to League Two. Yeah. It was only the last five games that we won that took us away from that. Because I remember, I think we beat Scunthorpe on a Tuesday night. And that was our first win in eight games. And we were in desperate straits before that. After we'd lost at Shrewsbury and we'd lost at Northampton as well. Page's interview tomorrow, he ain't saying no different to what Jake and to what Piercy said as well about the squad size. He describes us, you'll read the headlines in the paper tomorrow, but he said we're effectively a development team at the moment. And that's true. Mm. Right, 100% Charlton. Now, this is a good one. This is a good question, actually. What are your thoughts on Bowyer not using a Jose yesterday? Now, Richard, again, reporting that a Jose could well be off, given a really low squad number, 25, for whatever reason, has never seemed to settle at Charlton, may well be leaving before. I'd be surprised if he doesn't, just because you could probably get a couple of quid for him. So, but, I mean, did desperate times call for desperate measures? I remember Tony Watt, in between his loans at Blackburn and Cardiff, we needed him. We played him for one game before loaning him out again. Was there any reason not to use him tomorrow? Or yesterday even?
I don't think so, because he's still our player. And I think it's clear that Bowyer just doesn't particularly fancy him. I don't know. I imagine we're paying him quite a lot, so I don't know who's prepared to take those wages. I suspect he's happy enough to stay here and get those wages, even if he's perhaps not playing. But if rumours are to be believed, he's had offers from abroad, so I'm sure that's going to turn his head. But I think I completely agree with you, like we did with Watt. If he's our player at the moment, and even if you don't rate him or whatever, I know there was that incident at Wimbledon away last year between the two of them, but yesterday you could tell, like Nave says, okay, Taylor was holding the ball up well, but he was dead on his feet by the end, and I wonder what would have happened had we thrown him on. And I think, you know, while he's here, we've got to use him because the squad's thin enough as it is. But if Bowyer doesn't fancy him, then why name him on the bench in the first place? I suppose would be my question.
Yeah, I guess it'd be embarrassing to have literally no one on the bench.
Could have done it. Would have been an interesting statement, wouldn't it?
Yeah. I've had a DM actually from Arthur Roberts, and it's a good one here. Hi, never commented before, but I'm a bit lost as to why you think that Roland is bothered about football. You keep making this assumption. Could he be trying to force the old owners to relinquish their control and hand him total control? And I think now that there was obviously this £7 million worth of loans to the club from former directors. Now, the exact ins and out of that, when it gets repaid or who... You know, because there's some people suggesting that the reason the takeover hasn't gone through is because of some sort of disagreement over whether that will be paid before or just roll over again. Now, Rick Everett's a better source on that for me, if you want to get that explained properly. But I think that's what Arthur's referring to here. He says, a good article by the Hungarian club fans, Roland is only interested in money, and this is tied up in real estate prices. As for a customer statement by them, do you not think that we have taken up this stance by staying away? If we want water for the players, maybe we should turn up and pay. I have seen this all before, because he is not different to the Glicksteins. Hope the spelling is okay. It's fine. They did the same for us for years. Believe me, I'm 71 and my father and uncle all supported the club right through from the 20s. Yet our only good period was with Curbs and the directors we had then. How could the fans get together with the old directors and establish a 51% holding and kick out for these and kick out for good these carpet baggers? As for planning changes, not a problem with the current changes. Sorry, but we all need a new way of attacking Roland, not by alienating him with notes in his mailbox. That will only annoy him more. He's a millionaire owner. What can we do? Whatever he wants, because he does this at all these clubs. He says he's sorry, but he's just fed up. That's from Arthur Roberts there. So, I mean, obviously, talking about how come will fans be tempted to protest again now? Because, I mean, officially, the line is the club's trying to be sold, but it hasn't been sold. I understand there was some sort of note passed into his flat by something to do with the Belgian 20 today. I sort of only just saw the tweets when I was getting off the train at King's Cross after coming back from Newcastle, so I haven't got the full story on that yet. But and he also says, why do you assume that Roland's... I mean, again, it is... I don't think any of us are really thinking that he cares about the football anymore, and we can see that in the team that he's putting out, he's allowing us to put out.
Yeah, that's the frustrating thing, because there's... It just seems like there's not much that we can do. I mean, you're going to have people that protest, which is their right. You're going to have people that don't come to the games. You're going to have people that do come to the game. And I think that's just where the frustration is, because you don't know what he's thinking or what his plans are. He probably doesn't care about the club. He probably does, but I don't think he's that bothered, because he's like you say, he's a billionaire. So him funding his losses, he'll keep doing that as long as he gets his money that he wants. But that's the frustrating thing. Cause it just seems like it's just going on forever. It's like Groundhog Day for the last 2 years.
Yeah, right on the Cheltenham Life Forum, Shirty5 asked us if the lights are working in the studio. Now,
no, we haven't done.
I know we said that as a joke, but genuinely, like, the majority of the light bulbs in here have gone out. But
we've got two out of
Two out of five, six. Now, one of them's my fault, because it started flickering last season. I tried to turn it, I accidentally broke it. So I put my hands up for that. The rest of them, I just don't know how to get it fixed, to be honest, because I don't work here. So
no one does.
So. Fun Bluff then started making up jokes about the toilets. You're not allowed to flush them anymore. That's not quite true. Now, Jimmy Dutton actually walked back to the station. Some of the players got the train back yesterday. Obviously it's much quicker to get the train back, and Jim walked back with him and said they were the players run that you obviously chatted with him, they are unhappy with the challenge on Pierce by Gooch. They felt was a red card, particularly annoyed as without Pierce, Gooch was able to pop up and score the winner a minute later, and he said that Pierce has a scan today, and I'm sure we'll find out the results of that scan as soon as possible, which the club will let us know when they know. Phil said, very sad watching the boys play their hearts out yesterday with only 5 subs and only 2 of them have any first team experience. Our club is slowly being destroyed by Du Châtelet. I just cannot believe why the EFL have not called Rowland in to explain his actions. The Aussies are not helping, either with the longest takeover on record. Dare to dream that John Sulaco on Love Sport Radio is not on a huge wind-up. I'm sure he's not on a wind-up as such. So
he's probably got his wires crossed.
Yeah, or just whether he's as informed as you hope. I'm sure there's plenty of businessmen who go around saying, oh, I'd quite like to invest in this and that.
Buy a yacht and a football club
we'll find out, I guess. Right, Albert Rossi says, Lou, if we'd won on Saturday, we'd have covered over the cracks and people saying our team is not too bad. I mean, it certainly would have. I mean, they wouldn't. I don't think we quite deserved to win, but if they'd got something out of that, they would have deserved it. But certainly, I mean, it's over a course of a season. We are still concentrating on one game that we're pleased with our performance in. We're still lost, and it's how this squad and with players, whether they're coming back or not, how that's going to survive over a course of the season. Bob says, he says, hang on, guys, aren't we forgetting that the injured players will come back in 5 to 6 weeks? So it's not all doom and gloom. Well, hopefully it won't be too late by then. Right, let's have a quick break. We've still got a few emails to discuss, and then a couple of topics which I asked some questions about. We'll come back in 30 seconds.
Occupying that left-hand side at the moment. Little step over onto his left foot. Marshall, ball in the box is good. And Rebo, first time.
Oh, what a goal!
Lovely finish!
Oh, what a goal!
Joe Rebo gives Charlton the lead. Great ball in from Mark Marshall on the left-hand side. Chips it in. And Rebo, with a calm left-footed volley, have found the bottom right corner and Charlton have the lead.
Welcome back. It's Charlton Live here on Maritime Radio. Final 10 minutes of this evening's show. Looking back at yesterday's 2-1 defeat against Sunderland. During that game, George Lapsley, of course, made his debut. Charlton fan as a boy. Come up through the academy, captain the under-18s as well, didn't he, when they won the PLD2 trophy a couple of times over the last few years. So it's always great to see a Charlton fan in the team and see a young player get his opportunity. And yesterday I thought he took it, really, didn't he?
Yeah, I thought he was brilliant yesterday. I didn't see him in the Checker Trade game last year, but I saw him play when he came on. Was it against Blackpool? Thought he struggled a bit. As Nave said earlier, I think a bit rabbit in headlights, but yesterday he put himself about. He doesn't look like he's bulked up at all, but he seemed to be a bit stronger. He was certainly tenacious and getting himself involved in tackles. He looked calm on the ball as well, waiting to see where the movement was, not panicking. There's clearly a good player in there, otherwise we wouldn't have kept hold of him for so long and given him his opportunity. And he's someone who I hope we can give more opportunities to throughout the season. I just hope they're not forced on him and we end up playing him for 30-odd games this season, because that's not fair on him. He needs to be managed because he's still a young player, but there are signs there yesterday that he looks like a very good talent.
Mm, yeah, because I think it's easy to forget that I think only really in Joe Gomez have I ever seen a young player come in and be able to play as many games as you want straight away. And obviously, he, you know, if he hadn't got his long-term injury at Liverpool, I imagine he'd be in the first team at Liverpool every week now as well. So it's very rare. Other than that, you look at Carl and he's sort of really grown into it the last couple of years. Remember how much it destroyed him really playing too young. So yeah, you hope we don't have to overuse him because he is such a youngster. But impressive yesterday. Andrew Wheaton said he was impressive, had good energy. Stuart said he'll be a regular in the 11 this season if the young man stays fit and healthy. And James says decent, hope he gets a run in the side. I've heard lots of good things about him. Now, before I go onto the emails as well, one of the other things that came out of yesterday, of course, as I mentioned earlier, we were finally able to report the worst kept secret that Jake unfortunately had suffered a season-ending injury before the season even started. So I just asked how much of a miss people will think he will be. James said massive, in my opinion. He can run a game, and when he is at it, everything can go through him. We won't get nearly as good a stand-in if Bo does sign someone. I'm gutted for Jake as well. Stuart said huge as the owner will replace him with Mr. N.O. Body. And Sammy said it's massive, but we're heartened by the performance yesterday. If we can get a like-for-like replacement, then we should be okay. Spenny then tweeted us saying something to talk about, and this was, like I say, this rumour about Aribo going to Southampton. I mean, it's just a rumour this as it sounds. So the Independent put that in their report about how bad everything is, that he'd be available for £1 million. And so, I mean, like I say, if he's available for £1 million, I might get £1 million. Well, if I could scrape a few pennies together, I'd buy him, just get him around the house. Because, I mean, that is an absolute steal for Joe Aribo. So if he is available for that amount of money, then we could be in big trouble. I mean, Bo said he's sure. I only framed the question as, do you think you'll get someone in? And he went, yeah, I'm sure he'll let me get someone in. And put that quote out, and everyone thought he was being sarcastic, I think. But, yeah, we'll see. Kai says, I actually love Charlton Ivar. Thanks, Kai. We love you too. 100% Charlton. Boyas said, we will get a goalkeeper, a centre-back and a central midfielder. But if a Jose goes, won't we need another striker as well?
I don't know, possibly, but I think you've got, I think you, so who have we got? We've got Taylor, you've got Vetekele, Fosu could play up there, Clark plays in the hole. We could, but I wouldn't be, you've got Hackett, Fairchild, and I wouldn't be that bothered if we didn't, because I think we'll have enough firepower with Vetekele, Taylor, Carlin, because you can only play two at a time, can't you? You ain't going to play three, but I'd rather get Jose's wages off the book and strengthen in another area, especially with Jake now.
Yeah,
you're going to have to play big money for a ball player.
Well, let's have a look at the emails. Chris Davin says, it's heartbreak, nothing but a heartbreak. Hits you when it's too late, hits you when you're down. Bonnie Tyler, newer thing about Charlton, did the Welsh warbler. we travelled to Sunderland full of trepidation, left full of hope. So unlucky not to get the richly deserved point, but hey-ho, we go again. Could be worse. Could have spent money, bought in 7 or 8 new signings, and suffered our worst ever first day league defeat. Eat your heart out, Robbo. Yeah, Oxford got a... had a difficult result yesterday, didn't they? They 4-0 someone. They lost 4-0 to, didn't they? I can't say I've seen the goals yet, so I shan't pass judgment on that yet.
He hung his players out to dry, I think.
Oh, did he?
Yeah.
Good. How dare they not play for Robbo. I hope that we do, if we do sign a keeper, it's as backup to Phillips and not the other way around. And I agree wholeheartedly with Chris. I've wanted Phillips to play last season as well, to be honest, before Rudd came in. Before Amos came in, even. People criticising him for Sunderland's first goal, yet failing to praise him for a couple of outstanding saves. Give him a break. He says, I'll leave you with this conundrum. Where have all the good men gone? And where are all the gods? Where's all the streetwise Hercules to fight against the odds? And then he put, maybe Joe Aribo.
I hope he gives us a lyric every week. Yeah,
thanks, Chris. Great to hear you, from you again. Greg Harris, hi all. I can only imagine that how every fan that made that long trip Saturday felt when the announcement was made that we only had 4 outfield players on the bench. Just when you think things cannot get any worse, another twist of the knife. He says, some background. I didn't renew my daughter's or my season ticket 2 years ago after being made to feel very unsafe, sat in the family stand, being surrounded by large groups of all-male Burnley fans, with not a child amongst them at the final game of the season. This on top of being made to feel like criminals with the body search we were both subject to at the turnstiles. Before the season started, my daughter and I looked at the fixtures and picked out the games we fancied attending this campaign. This is now on hold until after the transfer window closed. I'm a big fan of Lee Bowyer. He certainly, in my opinion, showed what he could get out of the players last season. Also, I was impressed with that he stuck with us despite not being given the job permanently. My question to you is, why would the current owner care if he appointed Bowyer as manager only for him to be replaced if a takeover went through? My biggest fear for the week ahead is that we lose more players on the cheaper, Rebo and Bauer, and then Boya decides enough is enough and walks away. We end up as a complete shambles and a laughingstock if we aren't already. Starting the season with only 14 fit outfield players, with the hope that some of the injured players will be back in about 6 weeks, is something I just cannot get my head around. Do we think that Solly, Page, Pierce, Lapsley, Aribo, Grant and Fosu are physically capable to play 40 plus games this season? It is like too many important people are playing a game of Russian roulette or who blinks first, rather than sorting out the situation one way or another. And I guess that sums it up nicely. Greg, just on the question about Boya there, I guess, well, because obviously he said at one point Boya did seem to think he might be given the job permanently before the Sunderland game if Rowland was still here. Now the only thing I can think is, well, if that does happen and then whoever the new owner decides to be doesn't want Boya there, then it just is another hurdle to then have to get rid of him, which is why it might not have happened. But then why was Boya supposedly told by Duchatelet that he would get it full time? Who knows? Like everything at the moment, it's a bit confusing and a bit difficult to work out, and just slightly depressing as well, right? Mark says, evening guys, sat listening to the show with my boys who enjoyed their first taste of football yesterday. Mark had his twin, well, his wife had his twins during the summer break, so well done to Mark. I'm glad they've got their first toast of disappointment already. There was an air of inevitability about yesterday, and due to all the circumstances surrounding our club at the moment, it was hardly a surprise. I don't know if we can give other teams a six-week head start whilst we wait for the better players and Reeves to get back, but there's no choice. Now for a week of clenching and hoping that Aribo or Bauer isn't sold for £20 and a set of steak knives or whatever we got for Josh. Rowland seems to be from the Trump School of Business. I'm not sure me not having a season ticket this year, 24 years in a row, is a good thing considering. All the best, Mark, and all the best to you as well. Dan Briordre finally says, perspective, hi chats, very disappointing result but very encouraging performance. Taylor's hold up play and threat was a class above. McGuinness, Lapsley was energetic, Aribo top class, Prattley very good, pass and move was very good, and I'm confident if we can get through this week without losing anyone. I think Boya should have sent on Hackett Fairchild to chase their centre back down. However, I can't bear the overreaction to losing to Sunderland. In effect, we lost 1 point from the position we were in the 95th minute. Ari Duchatelet, I'm sure he wants to sell, but if the Australians can't sort out the deal over so many months, then is it really his fault? If this falls away, then as a businessman, he will definitely not want us to go down. So I fully expect some loan deals this week. Fans constantly saying to RD, just sell the club, is meaningless because he needs a buyer who can pay the asking price or negotiate it down, and he is still subsidising the club by a considerable amount each month. That said, I do wish he would just sell the club. Well, I guess if his asking price was a lot lower, then the club may well have been sold by now, because you would have had more suitors perhaps who could have found whatever this current problem is and sorted it out already. You know, like I say, I mean, if the problem is the funding which is what Richard suggested on the paper the other day, then if the price was low, there wouldn't be a problem with it.
No, I don't see how you buy something, make it worse, and expect more money from when you sell it. It just doesn't make sense.
Right, we've run out of time on tonight's Charlton Live. Thank to all of you who've tuned in, our first Sunday show of the season. I hope you've enjoyed it. Tom and Nathan, thanks for being here.
Cheers,
see you Thursday.
Yeah, I've been Louis Mendez. We'll be back here on Thursday evening with a big match preview live at 7 o'clock on Maritime Radio. We'll look ahead to next Saturday's game against Shrewsbury. But thanks for all your correspondence, your tweets, your emails, your forum posts. Hope you've enjoyed it, and we'll see you soon.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.